This will be the first of many press conferences that I hope to hold during the next 4 years. I hope that I can have at least 2 full-scale press conferences a month while I am president. During this transition period, there might be less frequent than that, but we anticipate another one in about 2 weeks. The first thing I want to do is to express my deep thanks to all the people of this country who have expressed their confidence in me. We've campaigned now for almost 2 years, my family and myself, and we've been graciously received, and I'm very grateful for the honor that's been bestowed on me. I might say that no matter how anyone may have voted on Tuesday for me or for President Ford or others, I deeply need the support of all American people as we approach the time for a new administration next January. I also want to express my special thanks again to President Ford and to Vice President Rockefeller and others who work with them and the present administration for their gracious offer of help that's come to us from many sources in the last day. And we will take full advantage of the opportunity to have a smooth and a harmonious transition period. And I want to thank Senator Mondale for doing such a superb job throughout the country after he was chosen as vice presidential nominee. He and I have become close personal friends, and I expect him to play a larger role in the next administration than any other previous vice president has ever played. I think this will be demonstrated to the press and to the public during the coming weeks as we prepare for the transition from one administration to another. We hope to have an immediate and very close initiation of proper relationships between myself, Senator Mondale on the one hand, and the members of Congress on the other. And as we prepare for major problems concerning putting American people back to work, increasing job opportunities, the control of inflation, energy policy, defense matters, tax reform, welfare reform, other matters that have been discussed in the campaign, we'll work intimately with Congress on a bipartisan basis to achieve these goals. I might point out that we have initiated today and will be continuing in the next few weeks a very thorough preparation for the transition period. This will involve the preparation of a budget for the transition, an establishment of an office in Washington, which I will visit on occasion, and also the preparation for appointments of major importance in the next administration from cabinet officials on down. Senator Mondale will work as a full partner with me in all these matters that relate to the transition, preparing for the next administration. The last thing I'd like to say before I answer questions is that I know the American people realize that we can't do everything. It's going to require a great deal of cooperation between myself as a president-elect, others who will serve in the administration, and the American people and the Congress. We'll set priorities. We'll work hard to accomplish all of our goals. But there has to be a realization that it's a shared responsibility among the people of this country. And now I'd be glad to answer any questions, beginning with Mr. Lowe.
You have proposed a great number of rather severe changes in the American government, the reorganization of the bureaucracy, tax reform, the national health program, welfare reform, urban assistance, and so forth. Sir, given the margin of your victory, do you think that you have a sufficient mandate from the people to get these programs through Congress?
Well, I believe yes. Although I would have preferred a unanimous vote on Tuesday, I think that the mandate was broad-based, and I think certainly adequate. There were times Tuesday night when, you know, one vote margin would have been very welcome. But we'll achieve, I think, about 300 electoral votes, which is about the same as was achieved in 1948, 1960, 1968, other close elections. We had a clear majority of the total electorate in this country, which has been not always the case. I think 13 presidents have been elected with less than 50% of their votes. And I believe that there has been such a clear discussion of issues in the campaign, particularly including the three 90-minute debates. And the fact that the Congress and I will both represent the same party is that the reorganization of the structure of government, basic tax reform, welfare reform, the evolution of an energy policy, and other matters of this kind will be not only possible, but I predict that they will be achieved. I don't underestimate the difficulty. I think the thoroughness with which we prepare for the transition from one administration and the close relationship that we can build with Congress and the openness of our expression of hope, our detailed plans as they do evolve to the American people, these things will make these achievements possible. But there are three entities that have to be involved: the American people, the Congress, and the executive administration. And I believe that all three of those are eager now to see those accomplishments realized.
I'd like to throw a bit further your thoughts about the election. What is your sense of why you won? Was it a negative vote against the administration for high unemployment and high inflation? Or did your talk about trust and compassion pass some deep yearnings in the land? What is your sense further of why you won?
That's hard to assess without seeing a breakdown of the voters' attitudes as they left the polls and in the post-election analyses. I don't believe that there was a strong negative reaction to President Ford and his administration. All the opinion polls that I have seen and my own assessment of the people's attitudes is that Mr. Ford enjoyed a very positive reaction or image among the American people. I think many felt that he had only served part of a term, that he did an excellent job in correcting the problems that had been extant in the White House with Watergate, and many people felt that he deserved a time to show on his own that he could accomplish more in his own administration. That was the things that worked in his favor. We ran a very wide-based campaign. We have, I think, had an adequate chance to discuss the issues. I think in the trust among people toward myself and President Ford, there was no substantial difference. I think that many people felt there was a time to change in Washington, to have a more aggressive leadership demonstrated. I think there was a deep concern among the American people, and there still is, about the very high unemployment rate, inflation rate, and the unprecedented budget deficits. I think one of the things that worked to my advantage was my commitment to a businesslike, tough, competent administration of the executive branch itself. And perhaps one other factor, these are all just personal opinions, was a desire on the part of the American people to see some harmony return to Washington with cooperation between the President and the Congress, provided the President still exercises strong leadership when there's a disagreement between the White House and the Congress. But it's hard for me to assess it except as a very deeply involved person. I think the objective analyses from public opinion polls would probably be more accurate, perhaps, than my own opinions. Yes, Mr. Slipstock?
Top economic advisors, Mr. Klein, has talked of the possibility of a need for a $10 to $15 billion additional tax cut.
Yes.
If the economy continues to stagnate. What factors will you take into consideration that might cause you to make such a recommendation, and what are the chances that such a recommendation will be required when you take office in January?
Several of those who have advised me on economic matters have said that if the economy is still as stagnant next January as it is now, that a tax reduction primarily oriented toward the payroll tax level might be necessary to stimulate the economy. The size of the reduction would still have to be determined, as would the need for it. I think, though, that this would be a very strong possibility. If there is no recovery in the rate of growth of our economic product, which has been fairly low recently, and if the economic indicators for this next quarter should show a negative aspect, as I have for the last 2 months. So that is a possibility. It's one that we will assess continually. If any tax reduction comes, it would be to stimulate purchasing power among the average American family, would be heavily oriented toward the lower payroll level. Please.
When you say payroll tax, do you mean the deduction from individual income on a weekly basis, or do you mean something that relates to Social Security payroll deductions?
I think the major thing that I could say, without being too specific, which I'm not qualified to do yet, is that it would come in order to stimulate purchasing power of consumer goods among those that might receive the tax benefits. Yes, sir.
The Soviet Union and Egypt have issued an urgent call for a reconvening of the Geneva Conference on the Middle East. Britain is in financial chaos, and the SALT Treaty between the United States and the Soviet Union is in limbo. I wonder if you would give us some idea of what your foreign policy priorities are now.
Well, I've expressed it many times during the campaign. One would be to restore good relationships with our own allies and friends, which I think to some degree have been neglected in recent years. Secondly, to open up the policy decision-making, the policy-making decision process to the Congress and to the American people, and then to deal with these problems in an open fashion so the American people would understand them. Within the next few weeks, as one of the earliest responsibilities during this transition period, we will schedule a two-day session with foreign policy leaders, perhaps including the present administration, if that's if that can be worked out, certainly among those who will serve in the next administration, myself, Senator Mondale, and congressional leaders. And I think I would be better able to answer specific questions following that session. But I'm very hopeful that in the next administration we can help to alleviate problems in the Middle East and hope to have a general agreement there. But I can't answer your question specifically.
To at any point now reassure our allies or any, perhaps even the Soviet Union, on the continuity of U.S. foreign policy at this juncture?
Yes, that should be clear to them. There will be, obviously, continuity. I hope that that we can continue our procedures already initiated so that quite soon, within the next 2 or 3 weeks, hopefully I might meet with President Ford and his key cabinet members that he chooses to bring into the session, so that I can receive a briefing on what our present policies are, and then at that time would be an appropriate time for me to express a major commitment to continuity. But I can assure both our continual allies and friends, and particularly those neighbors in this hemisphere, and those who are potential adversaries with whom we have friendly relationships now, the Soviet Union, People's Republic of China and all, that we will be constantly searching for peace. We will constantly search for stable and predictable relationships with all nations, and that there will be a substantial amount of continuity as the transition takes place from one administration to the next. Yes, sir.
Could you tell us something about how you will go about making your cabinet appointment? Yes. Do you have a priority about the post you would like to fill, and do you have a deadline by which you hope to have all
this? I'll be glad to. The procedure that I shall use for choosing cabinet members and other officials at the cabinet level will be patterned after the one that I used in choosing the vice presidential nominee after I received the nomination of the party. We will seek in every instance for approximately 75 top positions recommendations from knowledgeable people around this country and assess those recommendations, interview those who might be qualified, try to achieve some geographical and other balance in the total cabinet and the public servants there. I would guess that this would be a very careful, very slow, very methodical process. I don't anticipate any cabinet positions being filled anytime soon. I would guess not until sometime in December. As I approach the time for making a final decision, in each instance I intend to consult closely with Senator Mondale before a choice is made. And among several who might be considered for a particular post, say Secretary of Agriculture, Defense, or State, I would like to work with those several people as intimately as possible in assessing transition decisions so that I might get to know them better if I don't know them at all now. I would hope that by the time I make my final selections that I would have had a chance to work with the potential appointees and for those who are familiar with the procedure that I outlined following the choice of Senator Mondale as a running mate, that would be the pattern that we would follow.
Are there any positions you hope to fill first, second, or third? Are you looking at any sort of priority? Secretary of State first or Secretary of the Treasury?
Not now. I would like to bring into our advisory group, as part of the transition process, those who might very well serve in those two key positions that you named, Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State. But as far as my announcing who will be the secretaries of those two departments, I would like to reserve the right to do that no earlier than December. Yes, sir?
In the heat of the campaign, things are sometimes said hastily. And as you often stressed, you answered questions based on the knowledge that you had at the moment.
On the subject of Yugoslavia, is it conceivable that once you study that question further, you might reserve your option as president concerning any action by the Soviet Union there?
That's a possibility. I have made my position on Yugoslavia clear that if the Soviet Union should invade Yugoslavia, that this would be an extremely serious breach of peace. It would be a threat to the entire world as far as a peaceful world is concerned. It would make it almost impossible for us to continue under the broad generic sense of détente. And whether or not we actually committed troops to Yugoslavia would be conjectural. My opinion is that would be unlikely, but I would have to make a decision on a final basis at that point. I might add that my information from Yugoslavia has been that this nation is strong militarily, very highly united, very deeply committed to independence, and that the chance for a Soviet invasion would be extremely unlikely. Yes, sir.
Most of the American people have the perception that your election, in fact, is very narrow, that a few thousand votes in a few key states would have made you not the winner but the loser. And I wonder if you think that there's some message here that the American people were trying to send to you. And secondly, if you think there is one, how does that enter into your planning for the administration?
Since the election was over, I've looked back at some previous election results, and I think this outcome is fairly typical. I think that in 1948, 1960, 1968, for instance, in all those instances, the victor got less than 50% of the votes and approximately 300 electoral college votes. I think my total would be a fairly clear majority and roughly 300 electoral votes. I don't think Oregon has yet been decided, at least I don't know about it. I think that there was a good broad base of support expressed for me. I noticed very early in the evening I had about a 3 percentage point advantage over President Ford, and that clear margin was continued throughout the entire election. I don't feel timid or cautious or reticent about moving aggressively to carry out my campaign commitments because I only got about 300 electoral college votes. I'll be very aggressive in keeping my promises to the American people. And I believe the fact that the Congress is likely to be willing to cooperate, at least for the early stages of my campaign, will much more than compensate for the closeness of the election. It was the one other point I'd like to make is I think there were 7 states that I lost where I got at least 49% of the votes. So just a few thousand votes could have given me a very large electoral college majority. But I think it's the fact that I won and had such a broad base of support throughout the country and a clear majority is a good indication of support. Please do.
One criticism that has been made of the way you ran your campaign was that after promising after the Democratic Convention that you would seek broad input into the campaign from many elements of the Democratic Party.
Yes.
And in fact, that you resorted again to a very tight group of advisors whom you've known for a long time. Now, do you feel that the criticism is valid? And if you do, do you intend to do anything about it in running the country?
No, I don't feel that the criticism is valid. I would guess that a substantial majority of people who were state coordinators were not involved in our primary campaign. And among those who were leaders in our issue analysis section, which was an integral part of the campaign, very few of these had ever been associated in our campaign before. Those who have helped in the transition preparation, which is now just going to be evident to the American people, were substantially recruited from outside our original campaign structure. But I think we have a very broad base of not only electoral support in the votes cast, but also among those who have worked with us in the campaign in the 50 states, the issue analysis, which was the second part of it, and the third part was preparation for this next administration.
Yes, sir? Minimize the extent of your victory or the breadth of your support. They did seem to be kind of an uneven geographical distribution.
States and the West, and the Great Plains, the Rocky Mountains, and the West Coast, with one or two exceptions, remained loyal to President Ford. I had someone who said at the outset that you wanted a very broad base to carry out your reform. I wonder if you see this as a problem, more to the point, if there's anything that you feel you can or should do as president to try and win the support from this western part of the country for what you want to do.
I think you probably noticed that many of the western states that I did not win were fairly close, Washington, Oregon, California, and others. And I wish I could have carried all 50 states. But since I didn't, I hope to demonstrate, even before the inauguration, my complete commitment to being the president of all American people. I believe it's accurate, too, to say that the furthest western state was one that I did carry. That was Hawaii. And so I think we had a fairly good broad base of support. If you would compare the map of my own electoral victory with, say, 1960 when President Kennedy was elected, you'll see a very close correlation. But I wish that I had carried the whole country. I think I promised.
The OPEC oil nations are meeting in December to consider an oil price increase, possibly 15% or more. Is there anything you can do, not being president, to influence that? And if so, what is it?
I don't know of anything I can do. One of the things I want to be very careful about, including this press conference, is not to act as though I'm already president. I have no responsibility in the government at all. And I want to be sure that the American people understand this. President Ford is in office. He has the complete control of the government. He has full authority to represent our nation. I have none whatsoever. And any rights of access to the government information or to cooperation with existing cabinet members will be at the discretion of President Ford. Through my own public statements, I could certainly express concern about an increase in oil prices, which would be a very serious blow, I think, to the oil-consuming nations. But as far as any official capacity or any inclination on my part to be a diplomat or to deal diplomatically with the heads of other nations, I will avoid that very carefully. It is a serious problem, and as I just expressed, I am concerned about it. I would hope that all the OPEC nations would be reticent about increasing the price of oil, but I really don't want to mislead the American people into thinking that I can through some from political or diplomatic persuasion, influence the outcome of their decision. Yes, sir?
How you plan to appoint your White House staff, what role you expect them to play in the overall scheme of things, and how accessible would you want your staff to be to the Congress and to the press?
All right. I haven't gone into the exact procedure that I shall use in appointing a White House staff. The Council of Economic Advisors, the National Security Council, for instance, and the Office of Management and Budget are all departments or quasi-departments related directly to the president, and there are obviously others. I'll try to choose them strictly on the basis of merit. I'll use the same procedure that I used to choose the vice president, getting a lot of advice from people who are knowledgeable about qualifications of those whom I do not know. I would never permit my White House staff to try to run the major departments of government. I would choose, for instance, secretaries of agriculture, of the treasury, of defense, H.E.W. Hood, and others who are completely competent to run their own departments. And I would not try to run those departments from the White House. The White House staff would be serving in a staff capacity only, not in an administrative capacity. And that's the best answer I believe that I can give to you. Yes, Ms. Dickerson? Ms. Dickerson.
Mr. Lowe referred to some substantial changes that you have proposed in your campaign.
Yes.
Do you have a schedule or a timetable for your proposals on reforms and programs? Anything like a first 100 days of the Roosevelt administration or something like that?
I intend to have that, but I do not have it yet. It's too early. I'm going to spend the next week going over a voluminous compilation of responsibilities that have been evolved for me, including an analysis of each department of government, the next year's budget, a best assessment of the time schedule for keeping the promises that I have made during the campaign, and what I've already received is 15 to 18 inches thick. I hope that before a week goes by that I will have assimilated all that information. But as we reach conclusions during this period before next January the 20th, I will make those conclusions available to the American people. Whether we'll move first, though, on health care or welfare reform or government reorganization or energy policy or tax reform, those sequence of major proposals will have to be evolved in the weeks to come. I do not know the sequence yet.
Thank you, Governor.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Governor Jimmy Carter.